Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
That's the most difficult part of the presentation, getting that on the screen, and it's up there now, and I'm happy. It's good to see you here. When I think of West Huntsville, I think of people who love the souls of men. Go back into the 60s, and I remember West Huntsville, always concerned about preaching the gospel at home and abroad, and I have appreciated that. You have not lost that, and I thank God for that. Tonight, as we talk about West Huntsville mission work, I want to recognize Ben Stevenson, Cody Starnes, Jason Smith, Rodney Ratledge, Sam Hurst, Mike Gary, Mike Dacey, and Scott Colvin. They work with me on the missions committee. The eldership has set that committee in motion because the eldership does not have time to see every detail about the work here. That's what other members are for. That's the reason I have deacons. That's the reason I have other heads of committees, because they can take the information, submit it to them, and make decisions. That's what they have time to do. That's what the Lord wants them to do. But it puts us in a very difficult situation, because when we send recommendations or investigate a work, we have to do it with the best mind and things that God can give us. What are we supposed to do at West Huntsville? Mission work, what are we supposed to do? Send money all over the world? No, not so. So many churches do that, and that doesn't get the job done unless we know what's happening to it. But our concept of mission work sometimes is not exactly what God's is. The Apostle Paul, on his second missionary journey, was going to preach the gospel in Asia Minor. He got to Asia Minor, and God said, no, can't go into Bithynia. Well, what about Mysia? No, not into Mysia. And Paul is down on the seashore looking at the Aegean Sea saying, what am I supposed to do? And a man from Macedonia, that's another continent, appeared to him in a vision saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And he started preaching the gospel in Europe. But when he returned from Europe, he stopped in Ephesus to preach the gospel again in Asia Minor. God wouldn't let him. Isn't that strange? That God is keeping men from preaching the gospel? But Paul rented a school called the School of Tyrannus. He set up classes and started sending men into the mission field. And the Bible says that all Asia heard the gospel. Paul could not have done that by himself. God knew that. And God devised a way that it could be done. And I'm thankful that he did. Many years ago, we went into mission fields and did what we could. We came back, reported to the church. And there were some men who were figures in mission fields from the United States that came back and talked about all they had accomplished. And I remember one man in particular, whose name I will not call, that went into mission fields, and he would tell the brothers there, stay out of my way. We have Americans here that know what they're doing. You don't. And when we leave this place, you can come in and you can do what you're supposed to be doing. And he would baptize 20 or 30 people, sometimes 50, and then go back the next year, and none of them are faithful. I know, because I followed in his tracks. That is bad. And I determined right up front that I would never do mission work like that. Did my first campaign in Port Antonio, Jamaica, 1980. Baptized 16 people, and 12 remained faithful, I think, all the way to death. That's what we need to think about and concentrate on. We cannot do mission work for other people. It just doesn't work. I've conducted crusades in five of the islands of the Caribbean. And they've been difficult. And I found, as I continued to do this, sometime in an area, I would go down ahead of the campaign, sometime 3 months ahead to prepare. I'd say to the preacher, what are you doing here? What are you doing to bring the souls of men to Christ? We're not doing anything. We're waiting for the Americans. You're what? We're waiting for the Americans. It is true that in third world countries, Americans can baptize people. But it's also true that when Americans leave, they leave. And we have converted too many people to the Church of America. How very, very, very sad. It will not work. Alan and I were in Kharkiv last year. Two men came to our meeting that had been converted by Americans. I said to one of them, why don't you come here? He said, oh, I've become a Mormon. I said, whatever for? I don't know. I just wanted to. And the other one, nothing. I said to the preachers there, I said, what's happened? They said, he wouldn't have anything to do with us. When the Americans left, he left. Now, that doesn't mean that when we go into a place and we convert people and baptize them, that we shouldn't have done that. That doesn't mean that. But it means that we need to understand that we're limping along as Americans, can attract people in a way that the local people cannot, and they might leave us. So when we do that, we need to get a local man involved with this person who is going to be baptized. And incidentally, I do not baptize anybody in a foreign country except by request of the local evangelist. I always say, you baptize her, you baptize him. Because there's no magic in my hands. And I don't want that person to think there is. Well, let's see. I think we're going here. Yeah, there you go. This map is a little bit outdated. We're deleting a couple of these. I'm going to get to them, and we'll talk about that with you just a little later. The work in... Yeah, there we go. The work in Barrack Poor Trinidad, we started that in autumn of 2009 with Carlton and Josh Romsabug, good people. I had known them for a long time. We terminated that in March of last year because that work was not progressing well. Not because of these two people. They were great people. They worked hard. Probably some of the best workers we've ever had. But the place where they were was just not productive. I was so saddened by that. Brother Lewis and I went down there and spent time with them. He didn't know them before, and he fell in love with them. He knew what kind of people they were, but it still didn't do any good. The place was growing up around there. People were unconcerned about the gospel. And finally, the elders here said, well, that's enough. We had agreed to keep them 7 years, and those 7 years had already expired, so we terminated their work. I do not know what their status is right now, except for one thing. I know them well enough to know that he's preaching somewhere. I don't know who's paying him, but he's preaching somewhere. And the Trinidadians are able to pay him, and I would recommend that they pay him. Our work in India, this is very difficult. Brother Pete Joshua has been with us a number of years, and we cannot oversee that work there. We cannot oversee Pete Joshua's work. The elders traveled over there 1 year, and they cleaned out a lot of the work we were doing, and they left Pete Joshua in place. He is a good man, I believe, and he's a hard worker, but they said, we cannot oversee his work. Recommended he find someone else, and they terminated his work as of December 31st of last year. And there he is with his family, and here he is with the congregation, and that work is finished as far as we're concerned, as far as West Huntsville is concerned. This gentleman right here, Brother Rayo, is continuing his work, but he's doing it under the Willette congregation at Red Boiling Springs. And we're helping to support him with his work, and that's all right. But they have men over there, they have Americans on the ground, and they know what's going on. They know what's going on with many of the missionaries, and they accepted Brother Rayo. They did not accept, as of yet, P. Joshua. They might do that later. But anyway, these men, I hope, will be taken care of. And then there's Brother Rayo. Kharkiv, Ukraine. We've been there a number of years. Brother Earl Weldon and Sue worked in that area, and you're going to see the results of some of their work back in the 1990s. They worked in a place called Kharkiv Ukraine. And the evangelist there is Igor Olivera. And also connected with that is a Saltova church. And Igor was the evangelist there for a number of years in Saltovka. It's also in Ukraine. And there he is with a halo around his face. And he has just finished baptizing somebody. He is a hard worker, thank God. He works in the prison ministry, by the way. And too fast. There's the church in Saltovka. A couple of years ago, it doesn't exist anymore. Not in that meeting place, because they merged that church with the church at Alexeyevka. And Alexeyevka is Valery Gaidash is preaching there. We've known him a number of years, and he and Igor have merged their talents, and they're both preaching in that one church, and that church has grown a bit because of the merger of those two congregations. There's Valery's family. That picture was made a few years back. You've probably seen it before, but he has a beautiful family, and he is a hard worker. Valery is going to take a secular job probably about next August or September, and Igor will be the preacher there, the main preacher, if I can use that word, for the church at Alexeyevka. We don't know how that's going to work out. Brother Allen and I plan to go back and look in on that work sometime this summer, and you keep praying for it, and we hope it works out well. Yeah, that thing doesn't want to go forward. There you go. There's the building in Alexeyevka. That's what Brother Earl did. He took a factory building there, I believe, and renovated it. It's a beautiful place. Beautiful place to meet. It's very warm when they can heat it, and it's cool in the summertime. They don't have air conditioners, but they don't need one. It's just very effective. They're up at about the 41st North Parallel. The man nearest you is Igor. The man behind him is a translator from Kiev. And then, of course, there's Glenn Colley. And we really reached back to get this one. There's Glenn Colley, and there's Brother Wright. And Ina is down here in the corner. Ina works with us to communicate with those men who do not speak English. And we need her very, very much, of course. The translator back there is very good. His name is Odiam, and we use him for the work that we're doing there. As I say, he is a very good translator. There's Arnold, and the woman on our left is Valeria's wife, and I do not know. I know the lady on his right, but I don't know her name. Sorry about that. But that was made many years ago, as you know. And we're looking at a new work in Boonville, Missouri. That is exciting to me. Three of us went up there last August. I believe it was in August. Brother Paul and Brother... he's not here tonight. I've lost his name, Paul. Jason. I know Jason. I just couldn't think of his name. The three of us went up there and looked at that work. Back in 1999... Paul and Tammy moved up there with a small family. By small, I mean young family. And they did a fantastic work. They worked there from 1999 to 2006. And get this, and we'll see the pictures in just a minute, but there were 15 people there when they moved to that area. And when they left, 7 years later, there were 85 people there. That's hard work. Here's a street in that place. It is a country town. I looked at it. Paul took us downtown, and I said, I'd like to live here. No, I'm not going to move there, but I'd like to live here. It is a good place to live, I believe. And there is the church when Paul was there. Paul and Tammy were there. There you go. And that's when it was self-supporting, had two elders, had a building that is now paid for, and there they are. That lets you know that Jason and I were there anyway. Paul didn't get any of these pictures. He was a photographer. And Paul, this gentleman in blue is one of the elders, I think, is he not? Yeah, one on the other side is, but where's the other elder? Oh, he's on the same side. The man on the right is an elder, and the man sitting on that same side is an elder. This other guy is just a member of the church there. But they have few people in attendance. Don't know how many we had that Sunday morning, but not many. And they want to get the work started. They have potential. They do not owe any bills. Their building is paid for. And we're so very, very thankful for that. It's seldom that we run into work that is already has a building that's paid for in a town like that. The key to what we're trying to do is to find the right man to go in there. We're trying to find Paul Owen, but we don't want to send Paul. We want him here. So we're looking for Paul Owen number two. If you know where he is, please let us know, and we'll do what we can to get him into that work. And it is exciting. I asked Paul on our way up there, I said, Paul, the church, 2006, 85 in number, and now they have only a few. What happened? He said, they got the wrong preacher. Well, see, even Paul said, I don't know the whole story. So in our meeting with those two elders, we asked what happened to the church in 2006 with 85 members, that when Paul left, it just plunged. Now, most of you will not know what I mean by this, but I have to put it out to some of the old people in the church. They said one word. The word was crossroads. I knew exactly what that meant. And if you don't know, you don't need to find out. But that movement split the church all over the place. And I regret it so very, very much. It had its effects in Huntsville, Alabama. Had its effects everywhere. And that's what did that church in. And those elders there said, we didn't have any idea what it was about. They were teaching the truth. We just didn't know what else they were doing underneath their real activities. And I'm so sorry about that. And, of course, nowadays we would know better than to let that happen. But it was new at that time. There's the church paid for. Nice building. I love being there. This is, we're changing the subject now and just going through a few things here. Memphis School of Preaching, one of our students there. We have some students there that we're supporting. Gospel Broadcasting Network, that is very, very active. Barry Gilrey started that years ago. And then, I don't know who that is, but I think connected with Broughton, that company as well. Preaching a lot of the gospel, thankfully. I don't know what that picture's doing there. What's going on here? I see Jason over there at the computer. Oh, that's World Bible School. Right back here. We're doing it. We got good volunteers. And those ladies sitting there and those men, wonderful. Wonderful that we're doing that. They send gospel courses around the world, and we have some good effects for that, thankfully. Dave Miller. We know him. David is doing a whole great work in Montgomery. Speaks a lot. We help to support him, and we're very glad of doing that. There's Phil Sanders MacLine. MacLine died about 3-4 years ago, an effective worker for so many, many years in search of the Lord's way, and Phil is doing a fabulous job. He is a very, very intelligent man. He's also a well-studied man, and I really hate to say this about him, but he can read Greek as well as I read English. And that bothers me because I'd like to read Greek too. And I don't want to be jealous, but he's a great fellow. Thank God for him. Thank God for his work. They are, the group out there in Edmond, Oklahoma are sending booklets out. They do that once a month. Over 3,000 booklets of the sermons go out to various people. And there's Rod Kyle. Down in, he's working, not Australia, but just left me. I can't get that other place down there, that little that big island down there. Who? New Zealand. New Zealand. Thank you, sir. And he works on the Solomon Islands, travels up and down the Solomon Islands. And he is, I've been told, a very good worker. I've never met him. I've talked with him and I've written to him. But that's all I know about him. Itugui, that's where Brother Hurst and Brother Glenn Holmes went a couple of months ago. Enrique and Viviana Baldovino began that work 3 years ago. And it is a great, great work. There's their family. There's Jorge and his little sister, Mariana. Viviana is a great worker, and they are doing a fantastic job. Enrique believes in baptizing people. He just does. That's what he does. But he does it after he teaches them. And someone told me, I've known him a long time, but someone told me that he was invited to play professional soccer. And he considered it and said, no, I'm going to preacher school. I tell that because he's a self-starter. And you can almost look at him and say, this man is not an ordinary preacher. He's not an ordinary anything. He is ahead of the game, and I'm so thankful for him. There's the church on the 20th of December, 2015. There it is on the 26th of March, 2016. Up here on the first thing, they're just really getting started. Not officially started yet. And they have visitors there. Started off with about six or eight people. And then it grew and it grew. There's the 5th of February, 2017. The 4th of February, 2018. It is growing. It has grown. And they have a large number of people now. This is a picture made by Sam Hurst just a couple of months ago. And you see Enrique down here in the lower left-hand corner. He is ready to pounce on something. I don't know what he's going to pounce on, but he is about to pounce. And he's just a man filled with enthusiasm, thank God. We're working in Pilar, Argentina. We've been in that work a long time. It is a slow work, but Jorge is dedicated to the job. That's him and his wife, Patricia. They have married since he started the work there. Patricia is from Buenos Aires. And I'm going to tell you something that you'll say, how did that ever happen? But we're talking about a different culture. When he and Patricia married, of course, she moved from Buenos Aires, which is 40 miles away, brought her over there to Pilar, and she began teaching a class. She had been doing that for a number of years down in Buenos Aires. Her father was a leader in the church. I don't know that he was an elder, but he was a leader. And they were talking one night, and she said to him, I never have been baptized. Could that ever happen in West Huntsville? Could one of our elders have a daughter to grow up in the church here as a teacher, and she's never been baptized? Could one of our deacons have that? Could any member have that? The answer is no. We understand. But I told you that story to say, look, we're not dealing with Huntsville, Alabama. We're dealing with something else. And of course, Jorge learned that, and he took her and baptized her into Christ after they were married. There's the church at Pilar, small group. Some of those have moved away because of the economy. They've had others to move in. The economy is terrible in Argentina. You hear it sometimes referred to on the news about the terrible economy there. They have a different system than we have, and it's very difficult to live in that environment. Barry and Melanie Hatcher, you don't know them probably, but we began to support Barry a little bit back in January of 2018, and I've had no regrets about that. He is a great man. 1980, he and Melanie went to Jamaica with me, and I knew he had never been out of the country. I knew when he stepped off the plane that he was a man that was going to be a great worker for Christ on foreign mission fields, and that started him in his mission work. Any of you that have lived around the Atlanta area might know the name Sam Eads, E-A-D-S. Sam was an elder there at one of the churches. That's Melanie's father, and he has a spick-and-span reputation. They now live in Montgomery. He does fishers of men primarily. That's not all he does, but here's one of his classes in Cookeville, Tennessee. He'll do them anywhere. And what he does, he will go to an area and get three fishers of men classes going in the general area where he can travel by car or short airplane trips, and he'll conduct three at a time because they meet once a week and they meet for 12 weeks. He does not go and just teach one fishers of men course because his time is too valuable for that. He has to have at least three. And he travels in mission fields. He's in the Philippines here, but just look at those people there. Look at their desks. Look at their concentration. Look what he's doing. I was in the Philippines recently, and a lady came to me, and she said, you know Brother Barry, don't you? I said, I know him well. She said, I took his course in Fishers of Men, and you can't believe how much it helped me. She said, I had never taught anybody the gospel of Christ until I took that course. And now one of my students has been baptized. And that is a thrill. That is a thrill. And there are many courses. I'm not promoting fishers of men. I'm promoting personal evangelism. I've never had a course in fishers of men. It is very involved. It's long. I use open Bible study. But this is good. This is good. And Barry has done far more than that. He has been involved with Southern Sumatra Bible Academy. As a matter of fact, he established that academy. And the eruption of the volcano you read about recently was very near this academy, 80 miles away. And it devastated the coastline, which is not but a little way from the academy, but it didn't bother the buildings there. Alex Daniel is the director there. I'll show you a picture of him in just a minute. Alex grew up in Sumatra. His father was a political person, and he got into trouble politically. But Alex was a member of a cult, not a Christian cult either. And then he became a member of a Christian cult. He kept searching for truth, and someone told him, there's an American down here that works with an oil company. Why don't you go meet him? That American was from Florence, Alabama, sent there by his company. And Alex went down to meet him, and he said, James, that man taught me the gospel of Christ. I saw it clearly, and I've never turned back. That's Alex over there in the corner on the right side. And when I go into that area, I stay with him and his wife. They are fine, fine Christian people. And this is inside the school at the Sumatra, Southern Sumatra Bible Academy. And that is the faculty and staff in that picture right there, incidentally. And there are some good things in store for that school, and I'm very thankful for it. That's how the church looked in 1987 in Indonesia. Indonesia starts up in the upper left-hand corner and swings around and goes back all the way up to, it's so hard without a pointer, but you see that C-E-I-B-E-S-C, it goes up to that C, which is just south of the Philippines. Indonesia is not made like a regular country. It just rambled around all over the place. But we're trying to start a school up there in that Sulawesi. And earlier in the year when I was on that island, Sulawesi, they had a tsunami. And it killed many, many people, though it didn't affect the area where I was. How very, very sad that is. Oh, there it is. There's the growth now. That's what we have now. And these churches, hang on to your seats, these churches are not supported from the United States. They're supported from Indonesia. Now, the school has some help from the United States, and the faculty has help from the United States, but they send their men out sometime with $200 a month from the States for a year. And then they say, you get a job or you let the church support you. That's how it has to be. We have people on payroll in Churches of Christ that have been on payroll in foreign countries for 50 years. And the local church never turns a hand to help. How very, very sad. Doesn't happen there. And that's the church in Bali, which is a famous island there. The preacher and his wife are on the left, about to fall into the swimming pool or whatever that is. But I preached for that church, and they had only about, I don't know, 6 or 8 people. But that church has grown since I was there about 3 years ago. This man, the preacher on the left, owns his own car. He is in business. He is in the real estate business, and he makes a good living. And the church pays him only a very little. We pay him nothing. I don't mean to imply that we don't want to pay people, but I mean to imply that they have to stand there on their own 2 feet. We have a good amount of money coming from this church in the mission fields. We want to use it in such a way to make people grow in Christ, not make them sit down and do nothing. And there's the danger of continually supporting an area for so many, many years. Asian Christian University in Bugayan, Pangasinan, Philippines. And Ben Stevenson has been there with his wife, and they have worked in this area. It's a good work. There's D-Bar. You've seen him. And his wife and Big John. D-Mar no longer travels, regrettably. He's a great man. We need him to travel, but he does not travel anymore. That's the president and his wife of that university. This is Dr. Junis and his wife, Alma. And they are fantastic. Junis is a lawyer, and he has a contract with every young man that starts in that school. And that contract says this: you can go to school free here if you preach for 5 years after you get out of school. If you don't, you have to back pay your tuition. And if we did that at West Huntsville, it wouldn't stick. It'll stick with him. He's got all the records. He's got the judges on his side, and he gets the job done. This young man here, not so young as he looks, is Danielle. Danielle is the dean of that school. It's a small school, but he's the dean. And I asked Danielle some years ago, and I probably told you the story, how was he converted? He said, well, it's very simple. One of my friends told me about a woman that was having a church in her house. She had a man preaching there. I went down to meet her and learned that she had become a member of the Church of Christ when she was working in Dubai. I don't know how you'd become a member in Dubai, but she did. And he said, I got to talking with her and saw that she had truth, and I obeyed the gospel. And that was many years ago. He said, I have not turned back. I'm thankful for the gospel of Christ. He has 3 little children and a lovely wife. And these men are serious about preaching the gospel. I know some of them personally. I've taught most of them, and they are exciting. They are exciting. I love to be with them. And there are some more of them. I was in the Philippines recently, and one of my students was visiting there. Philippines and Singapore, I'm sorry, are 1,500 miles apart. I was in Singapore. My student comes to me and he says, Brother Andrews, do you remember? And he called a man's name. I said, I think I do. He said, well, he's a missionary in China now. I said, yeah, he was one of my students. He said, would you like to talk with him? I said, I would. And he pushed that phone around in front of me, and there he was. I said, thank God for that communication. The school there, the university, has 2 orphans homes on campus. And I don't remember exactly how many they have, 15 girls, 15 boys. This is some of those young ladies there that have grown up. I preached for that church on campus when I first went there last November. And I saw some of those girls, and I said, you know, these girls are growing up. And Juno said, yes, we baptized 4 of them the other day. They're 14, 15 years old, and they obeyed the gospel. He said, that's what our orphans' home does. We want these young ladies and young men to grow up and obey the gospel. And we want our young men to grow up and enroll in this school and become preachers. And all of them intend to do that. Now, brothers, you talk about a mission field. That's a mission field. That's a mission field. And he referred to some things that the Americans had done there that had created jealousy, bringing money in there. He said, we don't want it. We don't want mission work like that. We want mission work like we're doing here. We want mission work where we can train our own men and women to do that work, and we can support them with that work. I just have to tell you this story. A man from Branson, Missouri called me about 3 years ago. Brother James, I know you're working in the Philippines. I said, yes. He mentioned a man's name. Do you know him? I said, never heard of him. Well, he wrote us and said that he needed $200 a month because he had an illness and it was ongoing. He had to have $200 a month to save his life. I said, let me make a phone call. And I called Brother Junis. He said, oh, that man is in Manila. He's a liar. He said, first of all, we have health insurance in this place that will take care of him. In the second place, he's not sick. He wants the Americans to think he is. And I called my friend back, and he called me back in another month. He said, we sent him $1,000 anyway. We've lost our minds. That's not doing the Lord's work. This is my last slide. I want to tell you about Dixter, D-I-X-T-E-R. I don't know his last name. Dixter is a Malaysian. He was born in Kuala Lumpur. He was a member of a large denomination. When he became 11, 12 years old, he said, you know, this doesn't seem exactly right. I hear that we're not to worship graven images, and I do that all the time, and some other things. So he said, I started coming out of church and looking around, and I saw various denominations, and I started to go in, and they were not preaching the same thing. And he said, I got pretty disgusted, and I prayed, oh God, let me know which church to become a member of. Let me transfer to the right place because I'm leaving this place. So he went on the internet some time later, and he met a man named Angel Bright. I said, what was Angel Bright's name? He said, I have no idea. It's just Angel Bright. He was in Africa. And I told Angel what my problem was. He said, go find a Church of Christ. He said, well, I had followed Angel a while and said, I thought he was a good man. I went out and found a Church of Christ. I came back and wrote him. I said, Angel, I found a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He wrote back and said, leave it alone. That's not what I'm talking about. Just the Church of Christ. Okay, so he went back and tried again. And he found one not far from his house then. Went there, enjoyed what he saw, came back and wrote Angel. He said, I think I found it. He described it a bit, and Angel wrote back and said, just make sure that it has no instrument. I said, Angel Bright. It has no instrument, no speaking in tongues, and no hand clapping. I said, well, that about sums it up. And he said, they didn't, and I obeyed the gospel. Now, this young man, Dixter, went to work for a company in a mall selling hot dogs. He was not just the salesman. He was operating the whole business. Dr. Junis told me that man was making a lot of money. And he came to me and he said, I want to be a preacher. I want to enroll in your school. And he said, sit down. We worked through it. And I said, school starts Monday. He said, if I can wait just 1 week. He said, I've got a pretty good sized check coming. And if I can wait just 1 week, I'll come to school. Junis said, you go ahead and finish your work. Then he came to school. And what impressed me about him, when I would ask him a question in class, he would stand. He would stand and he would address me like I was a military man. And then he would, in a very concise way, give me the answer to the question. And I was so impressed the first time he did it. I said, Dixter, you are an impressive man. It would have been better if your answer had been right, but even though it wasn't, I appreciate it. But I was so impressed with him, I sat down and interviewed him. Let me tell you what he's doing. He's preaching every Sunday. Every student there is. The school gives him money to get transportation to go preach, and they give him a dollar to get a sandwich on Sunday while he preaches. He works 8 hours a week for the school. Everybody has to do that. They raise vegetables. They keep the campus clean. Whatever they do, they all have a job. And Dexter has a job. He works 8 hours a week. Has to donate 4 hours free. They pay him for the other 4 hours, 50 cents an hour. He can buy his washing powders, deodorant, shaving stuff, whatever. That's all he gets. And that's a man that had a fantastic job. And he said to me, I love it because I'm going to become a gospel preacher. And that's what I want to do. I want to tell you, it nearly brought tears to my eyes. It really did, because I've been in all kinds of third world countries, and I see young men who are trying their best to get into a school so they can get into I call it the Fort Knox Church of Christ funds. Not Dexter. Not any of these men. They have not been taught that. They do not know it can be done. And we'll have to go down there and tell them it can be done. I was in a foreign country one time, and one of my friends with me, he was there for the first time. He told a group of people, he said, there's plenty of money in the church in America if you're smart enough to get it. And I wanted to really wallop him. One, I didn't. I'm a Christian. But this is crazy. The people in Philippines, these guys don't know there's plenty of money here, and they don't know they should get it. And I'm not going to tell them, because I'm not going to help them get it. That's not being mean. That's being realistic. I'm so glad to be a Christian. I'm glad that you're a Christian. I'm glad you want other people to be a Christian. And I'm delighted for your part in the mission work. There was an old couple, Beulah and John. They had been married for nearly 60 years. And John had a little problem. Not such a little problem, but, you know, he had to go to the hospital. The preacher knew it, and as he was sitting at his desk that Tuesday morning, he all of a sudden remembered, oh, John is in the hospital having his surgery. I must go down there quickly, because John and Beulah didn't get out much. They had their chickens, their cow, and their garden and so forth, and they weren't so popular in the community. And he went down there, and Beulah was sitting on the front steps. He sat down beside her and said, Beulah, how's John? She said, well, the doctor come out a while ago, and the doctor said he had done all he could, and I know he did because, you know, Charlotte and Bob have this doctor, and they say he's really good, but I know he done all he could. He's a good doctor, and he said somebody would come out and talk with me after a while, and I'm waiting for somebody to come and talk to me because I want to go in and see John. Now, the preacher's sitting there with a woman who doesn't know what's happened. And he's saying, what am I going to do with this? But before he decided what to do, she said, preacher, what does expired mean? How would you tell her? Death is so terrible. And I'm thankful to God that we have hope in Jesus Christ. And if you don't, you can get it tonight. Turn from your sins, confess our Lord, and be baptized for the remission of sins. It's not by water, it's by blood. But you meet Christ's blood in baptism. And if you're not a dedicated Christian, then we're going in foreign countries, and we're spending money to send men there and work men there, but we can work with you easily right here and let you know how you can be restored or how you can come into God's fold and have a real hope of eternal life.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.